Sonic Interventions, a podcast by Intervening Arts.
Welcome to the podcast Sonic Interventions and the final episode in season 5. My name is Jan Dammel. I'm a postdoctoral researcher at the Collective Research Center on Intervening Arts in Berlin. And today I'm happy to be in conversation with sound artist and musician Elsa Mballa, also known as Ahmet. Welcome, Elsa.
Thank you for the invitation.
So great to have you. Would you introduce yourself to listeners?
Yes, I'd love to. So I am Elsa Mballa. I am a Cameroonian musician, guitar player that fell in love with synthesizer through guitar and through her loop station. I have been experimenting or very much interested in sound and how sounds can be manipulated, primarily through electronics. So I do installation, collages, compositions, film scoring. And for the last couple of years, I've been working with museums and they're very, very mass archive collections.
What kind of museums?
European museums for the most part. So the Musée Ethnologique de Genève in Switzerland, the Humboldt Forum in Berlin, and the Africa Museum in Brussels.
Yeah, it's really great to have you. I've got to know your work through your sound performance and your contributions on, I think, 2 panels as part of the online symposium, Unexpected Lessons, Decolonizing Memory and Knowledge in June 2021, which happened between Nairobi and Berlin. It was curated by Isabel Rabe and Maret Ifeoma-Kupka as part of the Talking Objects Lab project.
Yes.
It's really an honor to have you. It's like a full circle moment because in many, many ways, your work is connected to other artists and issues that have been guests and talked about on this podcast since its inception. And a first direct connection is to our very first episode from February 2023, hosted by Laila Zami, who founded this podcast. And the episode is called Lower Frequencies. And it had as guests, artists, scholars Mandy and Keith Oberdieke. Amongst other topics, they talked about alternative ways of listening. Maybe we'll get to listening later today as well. And the direct connection is that they have an amazing website called Black Sound Art, and they tribute the Ogini Sound Art Prize, and you got this prize in 2021. Congrats again.
Thank you very much. I think I was the first.
Yeah.
Even. Yeah. You were the first. To get that prize. Yeah. It was quite a surprise. They just reached out to me. I didn't even know that my work had reached so far out already. Yeah. They just reached out and were like, we love your work. Would you like to accept this prize? Basically. And I was very, very happy that they found that my work so impactful that I was able to get such a recognition on that level. It really, really filled me and gave me motivations for all the work that came afterwards.
Amazing. Great to hear. I'll put in the show notes the link to a longer press release where they explain what the prize is about and why they gave it to you. But I want to quickly cite extracts from that. So the Ogini Sound Art Prize is given to recognize excellence in the practice of sound artists of the African diaspora. And Mandy and Keith say, sound art is a practice that is often situated between the worlds of music and visual art. The interdisciplinary nature of the work can sometimes be a challenge for conventional means of institutional support. And that's why they chose to create their own prize. And they say, the Ogini is a gong from the Igbo people in Nigeria. The gong can be used to play music, to announce a messenger, to call on spirits, or to sound an alarm. The Ogini reminds us that the techniques of sound art have roots in old technologies and are at play in the African diaspora. And then they say about your work, we are inspired by her poetic investigations, by her use of field recordings to explore memory and identity, and by her attention to the voices of others in the diaspora. Her innovative practice has energized the field of sound art. We look forward to hearing her future explorations.
Wow, that brings a bit of tears on my eyes because this is quite a love message from them. And they are quite magnificent artists themselves. They do great, great, great work. And to receive that from them, that still means a lot.
Wow. And then we move to the second connection to our podcast, because you received this award, I think, in August 2021. And a month later, you were part of a performance in Treptower Park in Berlin called Eigensinnige Leben. And this relates to the next to last episode, Mit und gegen das Archiv, where we had musician and writer Vincent Barbaputilabo and radio drama creator Joel Vogel here. They talked about their decolonial audio work, Zurückerzählt, which is also available in English. And the episode has a small intro in English, while the episode is mainly in German. And following up on this audio walk, which people still gather around and listen to at Treptower Park, they created, with you and six other performers, a performance parcours called Eigensinnige Leben, which is a translation of Saidiya Hartmann's book Wayward Lives. And the subtitle is Eine Performance auf den Spuren schwarzer AktivistInnen im Berlin des frühen 20. Jahrhunderts, a performance tracing the footsteps of Black activists in early 20th century Berlin. I quickly read out a short description of the topic of the performance. When the first German colonial exhibition came to a close in Berlin's Treptower Park in 1896, which is the topic of the audio walk, 21 of the 106 Black performers remained in the city. They pursued education, started families, built networks, and were politically active. They sought and claimed their place in society and helped shape the city's history. Seven performers take the audience on a walk through the park and through time. They opened the archive of biographies, bringing old and new images to life. Eigensinnige Leben follows in the footsteps of Black activists in early 20th century Berlin, tracing their organized and everyday struggles to lead a free life. So, to you, what was your part in the performance? What did you do? And what was the interest in participating?
So this was almost, what was it, 5 years ago? Right?
Almost, yeah, 4.5.
Let's just remember I'm a mother, so bear with the details. But I was the sound person, basically, the sound artist. I made the sound for the performance. So we had, because it was outside, right, at Treptower Park. So we had boxes in the corner where I was performing. We had boxes in the trees where you could hear sound. So the way that the performance was delivered is that the audience started at one point with one activist that did their performance at the corner of the park. And then they will like show the way to walk around the park. And at each stop, they will meet one or two performers that would engage with them. And I think I was the last one. So when they came to my station, basically, they will find me in the lake at the Treptower Park. I had this fisherman suit.
Those boots.
So I was staying, because the performance ging, like, it was for many hours. So I was basically standing the whole time while they were walking through the park, coming to my station. I was already standing in the water, because also when you would move through the park, you could see me from different areas, right? And I would be watched as I was looking through the water, searching for something. So when they get to my station, when the group finally arrive, they will find me looking for something. And I will come with water in a bottle, and I will fill, because there were bottle, empty glass bottles standing, I remember now, and I will fill them up with water, and then I will give it to them. It was this idea, I believe, of picking up information, memories. Water is a container, right? You can put anything in water and kind of carry it. To kind of give people water, give them information, give them knowledge about where they're at, what this place, the Treptower Park, represent. Information that even me, myself at that time, I didn't even know that the Treptower Park had such an history, because there's nothing written, which is quite catastrophic. So very, very glad for people like Vincent and Joel for picking up such a dramatic story and making such a long-lasting project. And with Zurückerzählt, they keep going. So 5 years in, yeah, so it has been a very beautiful experience. I was making the sound that they were hearing when they were coming, and also having that little performance moment interaction with them. And I think we repeated at least 4 times per day, and we did like for 3 days. So it was quite intense.
Many performances.
Yes, it was also Corona, right? So we couldn't be in rooms. That's why also the performance was taught outside. So a lot of restriction also, because we couldn't hug or things. Anyway, but the whole atmosphere was quite caring at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, I recommend listeners to listen to the whole audio walk, which is also available in English, and the episode with Vincent and Joelle. Just brief context, you know, there was like for many months in the summer of 1896, there was one of those very cruel dispositives of a colonial exhibition in Treptow Park, where 106 women, children, and men from the back then colonies were contract workers, and they were sort of contract workers to this colonial show. But the audio walk, the exhibition, which is still on view, looking back, zurückgeschaut on at Museum Treptow, and also your performance focuses on the resistances, the acts of resistances of the performers, and the performance specifically had a focus on those 21 who stayed.
Yes.
In the early 20th century, founded families, etc. You mentioned your work with sound. So we'll hear an excerpt of your sound work. There actually is on YouTube, you'll find it in the show notes, a 10-minute video essay documenting elements of the performance in the form of a video essay. When we now hear the excerpt, we hear a little bit of text spoken by the French performer, dancer, and choreographer Maimouna Koulibaly, and your sound work.
Do you like to move? Do you feel strong? What's your most powerful movement? Okay. So now, you are going to move your hips. Yes, like that. Carefree, yeah. Hey, and take out all the tensions of your body. Right now, like here. Yeah, come on, come on, yeah. And now, you shake. Come on. You shake. Shake it. Shake it. Yeah. Organize. Solidarity. Right now. Everybody, let's go. Let's go. Come on. Come on. Yeah, I like it. It's really good. It's really, really, really good. Yeah. Come on. Come on. Yeah. Yeah. Drop everything. Come on. Go. Yeah. À quoi servent toutes ces connaissances du passé? Quand leur corps n'est pas prêt pour l'ici et maintenant. Ouais. Keep breathing. Keep flowing.
As we just listened to your sound work, you mentioned this was my faucet. So what were the sources you worked with? And also how did you work on location at Treptow Park at the Karpfenteich with space?
So once the idea of the project was set or introduced to us by Joelle and Vincent, Joelle came to me and offered that they receive some recordings, some samples from the Lautarchiv, which is an archive, a sound archive located in the building of the Humboldt Forum here in Berlin. They basically focus on recordings of texts from indigenous societies. So we had this recording by Victor Bell, who is a relative of Douala Manga Bell, who has a very heavy story regarding German colonial past in Cameroon. I would invite you to look into it. they recently had an exhibition also going around Hamburg and Douala in Cameroon. So Victor Bell, who is, I think, a cousin, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, he seems to be like an adopted son by Ndumbe Lobe Bell, the grandfather of
Odalamanga Bell.
Yeah.
Okay. So he had these recordings made while he was staying in Germany. So we had various, or I believe three or four recordings of him singing different songs. I think one was a fisherman song. One was, how do you say that, Wiegelied, sleeping song.
And one is called Arbeiterlied.
Arbeiterlied, yeah. So I received all the recordings and I was able to choose how to work with it and really given completely creative freedom on that, which was amazing because that was my first interaction basically with Colonial Archive, right? And trying to make them into songs. And my focus was mainly about not just giving the heaviness of the project back, but also just the humanity of the one singing was important to me to preserve that. So I basically had this whole idea of the water because I already knew that I would be standing in water. I am also Aquarius as a sign, funny enough. So the water bearer, I think they didn't even know that detail back then, but my whole performance ended up being around me carrying water and sharing water. But I liked that idea a lot. So I played with my faucet at home because we have the sound of like this emptiness that is kind of there, like the lack of water. That's what I kind of played with the faucet. Like it's like in Cameroon, often we don't have water for a couple hours or days. You have that sound of like opening a faucet, but there's no water running. So it's like an empty, hollow, high-pitched thing, which you can hear in the recordings also. So I had made some recordings in Cameroon when I was living there prior to 2021. I just had to use some of them. And one was my faucet in Cameroon, lacking of water, which I thought was quite nice playing with that reference. Yeah, I used a DAW, a digital audio workstation. I tried to keep the sample always a bit raw. So that's the quality is not perfect, which I like personally, because I don't think that we should just erase the fact that it's the old recordings. And I like to keep that. I think it's also a little bit of vinyl passionate ear of mine. I like the old sound of things sometimes. So I try to keep that. And even in my practice today, I try to keep the same feeling while working with Audio Archive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. We'll shortly come to your other work with archives. I just want to quickly mention for listeners, and I'll put it in the show notes, that in preparation for this episode, I found also like more recent texts on the biography of Victor Bell, because it's a really interesting biography. He was born in Douala in 1890, and then as many children by the Bell family, for instance, or the Douala elites, were sent to sort of imperial metropole for education. And he came to Berlin in 1906 at the age of 18. Yeah, as many Africans, people of African descent, he sort of had to work as performer in colonial exhibitions and many, many movies. He married in 1918 and he lived in Berlin until 1952. He was also, after First World War, one of those important activists that Eigensinnige Leben portrayed.
Mm.
So he was part of the foundation of the Afrikanischer Hilfsverein in 1918. He signed the famous Die Bobe petition in 1919, even in second place, directly after Martini Bobe. And also in September 1929, he even acted as president of the League for the Defense of the Black Race.
Here in Berlin.
In Berlin, yeah.
I think it's important also that we mention, maybe in two lines, what the project actually was. I think it's important for people to know what it was about. Do you want to jump on that?
Yeah. Go.
So, which was quite interesting for me. I think that for a lot of people even listening, before you go in deeper into the research, it's important to know that the history of Black people in Germany did not just start recently, but far even before the First World War, they were already, as you mentioned, Black people came here because mostly from royal families in those colonies, right? Because the idea behind it was like Germany was luring them with this idea that your child will come back and have a high position in your country because they will be able to work for us and also help you people out, right? That was the goal, or at least what they sold many people. As you may know, Douala Mangabe was then killed by the German for treachery.
In 1914?
Exactly. That was also one of, unfortunately, the reality of that Versprechen, right? They were giving out those Versprechen, come to Europe, get educated, and then you can go back and have those high position, which is, funny enough, still very much a reality today, if you look at it, right? We are out of the colonial setup, but a certain mechanism are still in place. So to come back to that story, Treptower Park was a place where they basically had the mention so, where they presented the people from German colonies all around the world. So they were people from Asian countries, African countries, but also Southern American countries, who were basically working as Schauspieler, right, as actors. They were wearing their traditional clothes, and a fake village was kind of presented to the mass so they can watch them living in the natural habitat, so to speak. Many of them had also Lungenerkrankung because it was cold, and they were wearing like skirts, traditional African attire, in a weather that did not actually permit.
It was a very cold summer also.
Yeah.
I think around four people died also because of it.
So that is the story around Eigensinnigerleben. So Joël and Vincent pick up that story to make that performance and that show that is still going on today.
Yeah. And also the generation of Africans that came sort of after.
Like, yes.
Participants of the exhibition who stayed on, but also those who came afterwards.
Exactly. Because like you said, 21 stayed here and had families, livelihood, and made a living.
Yeah. And I'll put it in the show notes. There's also interesting, as I mentioned, research on the biography of Victor Bell himself and the situation in which these recordings you used in your work happened, because they were done at Humboldt University in February 1934. So shortly after the Nazi had overtaken power, the Nazis. Yeah, there's research showing that this white, quote unquote, researcher, he didn't speak Douala. He didn't understand what Victor Bell was singing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's an interesting article by Nepomuk Riva arguing that he chose songs that deliberately spoke back to this situation against discrimination, against the violence by the white Germans against those Africans.
And he didn't understand what he was recording, which is quite interesting.
The one record.
Yes.
Yeah. There are so many biographies already. And on the website of Eigensinnigerleben, you find in German a few of those biographies. And I want now to come to your project Kribi Archives, which you have been doing in Kribi in Cameroon. And a transition to that is that you also work with like a similar sound archive, not the same, but the Phonogram Archiv and other archives. And another way of relating it to our conversation so far is that also some of the biographies portrayed on the website of Eigensinnigerleben has also people from Cameroon who were born in Kribi. For instance, people like Bernard Epassi, who was 15 years old when he traveled to Berlin with the Cameroonian delegation in 1896. He remained in Germany until 1900. He was deported, but still he, with the help of friends, he successfully fought to receive his outstanding wages for his work. And there was also Josef Bohinger Bohole. He was born in Kribi in 1880. He was 16 when he came to Berlin. And yeah, his life was also marked by resistance. He founded a family, had children. He worked as carpenter in Berlin around 1900. And yeah, continued to live in Germany.
Okay.
So tell me about Kribi Archives. What is the site, the site historique? What is the history of it? And what is your project?
I have to start a little bit further back, because I am a Cameroonian that was born in Cameroon and grew up in Ingolstadt, South Germany, for the people who do not know, Baden-Württemberg. So I grew up in Ingolstadt, and pre-social media, pre-internet, it was a different time. So I have to remind people, because growing up as a black girl in a village in Germany at that time demanded that you were constantly stared at, you had questions that you did not have answers to, and that your parents, in this case my mother, a single mom of three children, I have two older brothers, did not have the capacity or to answer those questions. What I found I created a world, those questions will be answered in my mind. I always felt an artistic spirit. I played the guitar since I'm 16. First in church, my mom wanted me to be part of the choir, which I did. And then when I left to Münster, where I study, and came a little bit in contact with a more international crowd, I understood that we people of the south of the world, the southern südliche hemisphere.
So-called global south.
Exactly, so-called global south. We have a similar history in the sense that a lot of our practices are not known, not even to our mothers or parents, because it took a long period to kind of erase it. And then if you want to do that work to really like just understand who you are and where you're coming from, you actually have to go into academia and actually go to places that you wouldn't expect. And that's basically what I did. I then later on moved to Berlin. I got in touch with the Humboldt-Forum via this project, Eigensinnige Leben. First of all, the Lautarchiv, as you mentioned, and then later on Phonogrammarchiv, which is more, unlike the Lautarchiv, which is more about text and just different languages. The Phonogrammarchiv is more about musicalities and rhythmicalities, which is also, unfortunately, very much westernized. There's a Western way of, which is no surprise, right, of also analyzing African music. There was all these things about, I'm reading this book by right now by Kofi Aguavu, who is a music ethnologist from Ghana who teaches in the States. And he just opened my eyes on so many things, so many details. He was basically, he has this theory about the period where the ethnologic, well, the Beamte from Phonogrammarchiv, basically.
When, the civil servant.
Exactly. Went back to the colonies. There was this need to prove the otherness of the so-called colonized, right? So that carried even into music. So even when they were analyzing music, there was this need to portray, for example, African music as solely dance music, not music to be observed, to be listened to. It was very much about music that only go through the body. But today we understand that this was very much a racial question. It was an objective opinion. But it basically also dictated how the West saw the South until today. So all of those information came to me when I started engaging with museums and the way they archived and what they actually archive, because it was so interesting for me to tap into those recordings. Luckily, I'm a very likable person. I had easy access to all this information. Albrecht Wittmann, who used to be the director of the Phonogrammarchiv at the time, was very kind and gave me access to a lot of information. One of the most interesting for me was definitely the first recording ever made in Cameroon. It was by the Phonogrammarchiv. And it's nowhere to be found. Those type of things are just in their collections. Mm. It's not, you cannot really have access. If you don't know, you don't know.
So for listeners, this might be like late 19th century already, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 1890s exactly. Or something.
More even. Well, they have like a period because they don't have an exact date, but it's like 1904 to 1909, something like that. That's what is written, at least on the CD. And they are nowhere to be found, those CDs. Like the Phonogrammarchiv has a lot of music data. Some has come out on CDs, but a lot of it is just recordings, even like on still on wax, you know, cylinder.
On wax cylinders, yeah.
So I got to engage with all of that history, that which meant for me I got closer to where I actually come from. And that just nourished a part of me that wanted to see, in particular Cameroon, because that's where I'm from, where people there do not need to travel like I had to do to be able to engage with something African. Of course, it has a taste of colonialism on it. But the idea behind it is that it still remains, it's still there, and we don't have to travel all the way or beg for them to give us the things back, because also the power with audio is that we are a digitalized world. You can just send audio nowadays, right? Because it's this discussion about, well, in the South, they don't have proper museums, we cannot send the object back and everything, right? That's going on. At the same time, maybe I may surprise you, but I'm not a fan of that give us the object back. Not at all. I really do not align behind that, because this, also in my research, I discovered this has been a movement that started in the 1970s. There were people, African people, demanding those objects back. They died and those objects are still here. So I think that is also a way of just making us lose our energy while begging for something that belongs to us anyway. So I think we need...
And on top of that, there's the border regime of Europe and the racism with going on with all the visas. And
yes, that has been increasing the last couple of years. Yes, exactly. The paradox of that. So I think that it's about finding creative, more creative ways of access to that knowledge, because those objects represented a way of seeing the world, a way of perceiving spirituality. And since those objects do not have a place to live in, meaning a community where they used to be the center of, I think we will do our society in Africa today a disservice by bringing this object back and putting them in white wall spaces and expecting African people to pay money and go look at it. This is a very Western way of engaging with art. This is not everybody's way of engaging. I think there are very little society, indigenous society, that have been engaging with art in that way. Just, the object was always part of something bigger that was meant to heal, to restore, and we will come to it for question, for answers, for help. It was never a way to just look at it and find it beautiful and be satisfied. So for me to open that Kribi Archive space, which happened in March 2025 with the help of the Ethnologische Museum Berlin, it was a dream come true. I didn't even know how to get to that point. So when it even happened, to be honest, it took me almost a year to realize the impact, what that actually meant. We have a physical space in Kribi, Cameroon, that is also just by the Atlantic Ocean, the Atlantic that represents also the exportation of Black bodies into the world, the versklavung, the...
Enslavement, yeah.
Yeah, transatlantic slave system that has been going on for years. Also, to have a place like that, at that particular point, in front of the ocean, it feels like we open up a place to say we want to heal. We welcome back those souls, because we cannot demand people for our healing. We have to stop that. I think that as a collective people, you cannot constantly demand, because that's the idea behind it, right? We want the object back because we understand that they represent healing, wholeness, and that we need that, right? So Kribi Archive feels like a step closer to my personal healing and hopefully to a collective healing.
Yeah. Interesting. There's an Instagram account for Kribi Archives, and you recently published a new video. And I want to quickly cite from the voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
You say that Kribi Archives is a space for art and sound research. It is, later on you say, it's perfectly anchored in the discourse of repatriation of African artwork illegally exported to the world during the colonial period, as you just elaborated on. And then you say, Kribi Archives is a place where you can escape, listen to ancestral voices, sounds and melodies, while recognizing one or two rhythms that may still be rooted in contemporary Cameroonian popular culture. So again, stressing the link to...
to contemporary. Yes, definitely. Because my musical research, I also do a lot of Rhythmusforschung. I did a research on Biakutsi, which is a musical style from the Biti people, Central Cameroon. And it's popularized today, Bikutsi. It's actually it was made or performed by women before colonial times, but then German general came and did not find appropriate to have naked breasts of African women dancing, because it's like a percussion rhythm, and you can just imagine visually what that would then be, right? It's just like a group of women bare breast clapping on themselves and singing. So the obscenity for them, right? So it was forbidden. Then it was performed just by men until today, right? So it's very popularized, but it was so interesting to also do that forging and to understand how colonial mentality has seeped into every little corner, not just the way we see the world, but also the way we engage with our bodies, with ourselves, with each other. To be able to go into a place and listen to old recordings of Biakutsi, for example, I think that must heal a part of our understanding of self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about listening, we will listen now to a short piece you recently produced in Kribi. Let's have a listen. Thanks for sharing that with us, Elsa. What did we just hear?
So we heard a track that I made for the second edition of Kribi Archive, so 2026. March from April, I did a residency with a fellow artist, producer, friend of mine, Aurélien Bituel Tse Olenja. He's from Douala, and I invited him in Kribi at the space, and we exchanged knowledge about production and also archive material, which I had the permission from the Phonogramma Archive since I'm working with them. And he was able, together with my input, create this track that we just listened to, which is a mixture of 3 or 4 samples, I believe, from the Phonogramma Archive and from his personal collection also, and to create a very contemporary, strong, empowering musical piece, which I think sums up a little bit of my journey via music, via Kribi Archive, but also via the European Museum. It's really much a hopeful track. I hope that's where it's going. And that's where my career is basically taking me, yeah.
Thank you. We've talked a lot about today about your work with different kinds of archives, mostly ethnological archives. But 2 years ago, you started also to work with another archive, which has nothing to do with colonialism. You started to work with the As Nyang collection, which is a collection of 5,000 cassettes of African music of the last 50 years. It includes Congolese rumba, Ghanaian high life, Senegalese balak, Cameroonian makossa. It's really, really great. And in the show notes, you'll find a link to an amazing sound performance and conversation you did on July 17th, 2024 at Kindle Center for Contemporary Art in Berlin. You made a listening session and you had a beautiful conversation with a literary scholar and curator Ibu Diop. And you also have on Kashmir Radio in the same year, 2024, 3 over 60 minutes long radio shows where you share this archive of African music. It's so beautiful to listen to it. I recommend it to everyone. Could you briefly comment on what's next with this project? You told me you're going to be in Dakar later this year.
Yes, the Dakar Biennale is happening in November. So tickets are booked and we're currently planning on my intervention during the Biennale, which is going to be around the As Nyang cassette collection. So just in short, As Nyang is the name of the man that has the collection. So a collectionneur from Rufisk, Senegal. And he has been collecting cassettes from his dad for the last almost 60 years. So he has this amazing collection, but he also collects a whole heap of other things, pictures, photographs, because his dad used to work at the harbor. And so he was in contact with a lot of like travelers. So he collected a lot of materials. So he's going to be the center of my intervention at the Dakar Biennale for this year. And we're currently working on a book also with photographer Ibrahim Wan. He's Senegalese and also based in Berlin. He just shot for us the pictures of the collection, the cassette collection. We're working with archive books on a beautiful, I hope, representation of what contemporary African archive can look and feel like, which I think is a nice way to also end this podcast on a positive note, knowing that African archive does not just have to be colonial archive. It can actually just be family pictures or gathered material over years and given to us from generation to generation. So yeah, the As Nyang cassette collection, I would invite you to maybe come to a show, or I'm having the show tomorrow actually at Kashmir Radio at 11.
So this is like May 20th. It will have happened when this podcast will be published.
Yes, true.
But maybe you can listen it back on,
yes,
on the website of Kashmir Radio.
Yes, on the website Kashmir Radio, Ahmet on Radio. Ahmet is also my other name when I perform. So Ahmet on Radio is the hashtag, and you have a collection of all the shows I have done since, I think, 1 or 2 years. I've been doing it irregularly, but we've been good this year, I think. So we've been keeping up like once a month. I used to do like a little DJ set with the cassettes, but now I do 1 cassette per show because I think that we are losing the ability to focus collectively. It's also, my whole artistic practice also for me to learn how to sit still, learn how to listen. to myself, but also to others, without having to intervene. So this show on Kashmir Radio is also about that. So that's why we seduce. So tomorrow, I think we're going to Cameroon with Petit Pays. Please feel free if you want to listen to the album that we have currently in the ASNIAN collection. Tune in, listen in, and vibe with us.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Elsa, for being guest in our podcast. It was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Jan. I really, really much enjoy being here. It's nice to be in a place of knowledge and to share something as lighthearted as music.
Yeah, this has been the fourth and final episode of season 5. It was my pleasure to curate and moderate it. And as final words, I want to give some thanks. Thanks so much for the support to Stephanie Gregor from Euphonica Audio Production for being an amazing coach, cutter and producer. To Paulina Aronson, Franziska Lesok from the CRC Effective Societies, helping with room and equipment. My predecessor, Laila Zami, for starting it all and good advice when I started out. My colleagues, Emma Lowe, Aurelia Kraus, Arthur Hermann, Petra Wodke, and Doris Kolesch for serving as amazing sounding boards. I personally will be moving on, but the Collaborative Research Center Intervening Arts will stick around for another 3.5 years. Stay tuned for its activities in multiple media and have a nice rest of your day.
Bye.
Bye.
Sonic Interventions. A podcast by Intervening Arts.